Welcome to the March 10th Amador County Housing Element Workshop. My name is Marianne Mingus, and I'm the recording secretary tonight. And I want to make sure you're able to comment when it's time to comment. If you're calling by phone, you need to press *9 in order to let me know that you want to comment, and then I can unmute you, and then you'll have to finish up by unmuting yourself and pressing *6. And then those that aren't calling by phone, you're going to hover over participants and click it, and then go up to your name, and you can raise your virtual hand, and then we'll call on you when we're able. If you have any trouble commenting tonight, please use the chat box to let me know so that we can kind of go from there to make sure we get your comments. Thank you. Good evening, and thank you for coming out tonight. I'm Beth Thompson. I'm a principal with DeNovo Planning Group, and our firm's been retained by the county to prepare the countywide housing element update. And I'll just quickly let my fellow presenters and folks that are here for the meeting introduce themselves, starting with Chuck.
So this is Chuck Beatty. I'm the planning director. Amador County is the lead agency for preparation of the housing element. It's a joint housing element between the county and its five cities. So we will be the lead agency preparing the CEQA documentation, even though each community will have its own housing element once the project is complete.
And hi, my name is Jeffrey Sutherland. I am also with the DeNovo Planning Group, and I'm also the city planner of ION.
And so I'm going to go through some information about housing element updates. And as Chuck mentioned, this is a countywide housing element update. So typically housing elements are prepared by individual jurisdictions, but the county and each of the cities are working together to prepare a joint housing element update. So we're going to be covering not just Amador County tonight, but some information about each of the cities as well. And I'll just quickly go over the project timeline. So you've already met both of us with the project team, and we are underway on the housing element update. So we started work back in about September of last year. We kicked off the project. We began evaluating existing conditions and reviewing the existing plans and programs related to housing of the county, as well as each of the cities in the county. And we're working on the second phase of the project, the community outreach phase, where we're holding this virtual workshop. So we're having this available in person as well as online to provide more opportunities for participation. And we had a session earlier this afternoon as well as this evening's session. We also have a housing needs and priorities survey. So we have some questions for some polling activities for tonight, but we have a separate survey that's much more detailed. So I encourage each of you attending the meeting to take the more detailed survey so we can really get all of your input related to the county and city's housing needs and concerns. And then we're also conducting some stakeholder outreach with service providers, housing developers, and community organizations at this time as well. We're putting all of the information we received together into a draft housing element document, and that will be available to the public in about May for a 30-day public review period. And following that public review period, we'll make revisions to the document to address public comments. And then that will be submitted to the State Department of Housing and Community Development, which we refer to as HCD, for a 90-day public review period, or 90-day review period, during which time you can also comment on the document. Following receipt of HCD's comments, we'll make additional revisions to the document to address those comments, and then prepare a final housing element, and that will go to the Planning Commission of the county and each of the cities, as well as to the board and each of the city's city councils for consideration and adoption. Once it's been adopted by each jurisdiction, it will then be submitted to the state for review and certification. And so those submittals will happen as each jurisdiction adopts it. So there will be multiple submittals to the state for the final review. And I'll go over some of the basic information about a housing element. So a housing element is part of the general plan of the county as well as the general plans of each of the cities. And it analyzes the housing needs as well as constraints within Amador County and its local cities. Each local government in California, so each city and county, is required to update its housing element on a regular basis, and every Amador County jurisdiction must update their housing element every 8 years. The housing element lays out policies, and it identifies goals and programs that guide housing-related decisions and actions for each jurisdiction in the county during the 8-year planning period of the housing element. there's a lot of data that goes into a housing element. They get thicker and thicker every year. So we first look at our current conditions. So we prepare a housing needs assessment, and we collect data on the housing needs of the residents. We provide socioeconomic data and demographic data related to population and household formation trends, housing size, or household size. And then we also have information available on individual unique populations that may have special housing needs, including seniors, persons with disabilities, including developmental disabilities, large families with five or more persons, farm workers, female heads of household with children present, and persons that are homeless or at risk of becoming homeless. We also look through the existing housing inventory. So we look at a lot of data about what housing is currently available in the county. We look at the types of housing, ownership rates, the cost of housing, and whether or not the housing is affordable to the different income groups in the county in order to evaluate how well the housing types, sizes, and costs meet the needs of the current and potential future residents of the county. In this housing element cycle, this sixth cycle, there's a new requirement called affirmatively furthering fair housing. And so this assessment is required to be included in housing elements to address patterns of segregation and to foster inclusive communities that are free from barriers that may restrict access to opportunities based on various protected characteristics. So in order to perform this analysis, we look at a number of factors, including the county and each city's capacity for fair housing outreach as well as enforcement, existing patterns of segregation and integration. We identify racially and ethnically concentrated areas of poverty, and these are designated by the state, so there's a lot of state mapping and state data that we pull that has been already gathered by the state that we review for this. We also look in disparities in access to opportunities, so areas that have a lot of place-based opportunities, economic opportunities, employment opportunities, education opportunities, and services available, and whether or not how that matches with income trends, racial trends, and various other trends, and look at whether or not there's adequate access to opportunities. We also look at disproportionate housing needs among various populations and the potential for persons to be displaced, so either by new development or other housing constraints that may displace a household. The housing element also identifies constraints to providing housing. So this includes both governmental constraints and non-governmental constraints. So non-governmental constraints include things like market conditions, the cost of land, the cost of development, financing rates, and looking at environmental constraints such as seismic and wildfire hazards, flooding, things that the county can't control. And then we also look at the constraints associated with each of the jurisdictions. So we look at the county and each of the city's general plan standards, zoning requirements, development standards, and other regulations and requirements that may constrain or reduce the opportunity to develop, rehabilitate, or preserve housing. We also look at resources available for the development and preservation of housing. This includes financial resources, so funding from the state and federal government that's available for home rehabilitation programs, first-time home buyer programs, and various housing development and infrastructure improvement programs. And then one of the most important components of the housing element update is the residential sites inventory. So we look at the land that's available to accommodate new housing. And in particular, we'll get to this in a few slides, we look at the ability of the county and each of the cities to accommodate their allocation of housing units that are mandated by the state. The housing element also includes a housing plan, and this is kind of the active component of the housing element. It establishes goals, policies, and housing programs that the county and each jurisdiction will carry out during the planning period to address identified housing needs and constraints. So these programs must ensure that there is adequate land available to meet the specified housing needs of each jurisdiction, ensure that the jurisdictions have programs to facilitate affordable housing development, mitigate governmental constraints on housing development, either by eliminating or reducing those constraints, and then also promoting equal access to housing. Planning for housing in Amador County, there's a few things to take into account. So the county and each of the city's role in regional housing. So the State of California's Department of Housing and Community Development, HCD, assesses and plans for housing growth throughout the state. So HCD assigns regional housing need allocations or RENA numbers to each county or each group of counties called the Council of Governments. And these numbers are based on projected population and housing growth, factors, income levels, vacancy rates, and various equity factors that the state looks at in assigning the housing growth numbers. And these are assigned to the unincorporated county and to each city in the county by income level through the RENA process by the state. And so this specifies the amount of housing that each jurisdiction must plan for as part of this housing element. So Amador County's RENA for the sixth cycle is 741 units. And these are divided between various income groups. The very low income group earns less than 50% of the area median income, or less than $39,350 a year for a family of four. The low income group earns between 50 to 80% of AMI, which is a maximum of $62,950 a year for a family of four. The moderate income group earns from 80 to 120% of the AMI, which is less than $94,450. And then the above moderate income group is those that earn above 120% of the area median income. So when we look at the allocation by income group, we have 189 total units for the very low income group, 123 for the low, 140 for the moderate, and 289 for the above moderate. And so each jurisdiction has to identify enough realistic sites to accommodate the RENA, but the cities and county are not responsible for building the housing, but they are responsible for identifying adequate land with appropriate zoning to accommodate the units. And so these units are allocated between the county and the cities as follows. Amador City has one very low, one moderate, and two above moderate income units for a total of 5 units. Ione has 30 very low, 20 low, 24 moderate, and 64 above moderate income units for 117 units. Jackson has 27 very low, 23 low, 24 moderate, and 64 above moderate for a total of 138 units. Plymouth has 7 very low, 5 low, 5 moderate, and 13 above moderate, or a total of 30 units. And Sutter Creek has 15 very low, 12 low, 13 moderate, and 34 above moderate for a total of 74 units. And then the majority of the allocation, or the largest allocation, single allocation, goes to the unincorporated county with 109 very low income, 62 low, 72 moderate, and 134 above moderate income units for a total of 377 units. And so the county and the cities each have to identify an inventory of residential sites to accommodate these units. And so, as I mentioned, the county and each city must demonstrate enough land zoned at suitable densities to accommodate the allocations. And when we talk about suitable densities for the very low and low income groups, the state anticipates that we'll be looking at densities of 20 units to the acre, 15 to 20 units per acre typically, and the sites have to be at least a half an acre but less than 10 acres unless we can demonstrate that there has been adequate development or trends, development trends of different densities on different property sizes. And so if the city or the county does not have adequate sites, then it must include a program in the housing element to rezone adequate sites within a year of the housing element adoption due date. The development of sites, if you're really interested in how these sites are assessed and how we identify adequate sites or not, the state has the Housing Element Site Inventory Guidebook that they released in June of 2020. And that establishes the state's practices in reviewing and analyzing whether or not the sites that are submitted in the housing element are adequate. And so the state law and the government code does identify very specific requirements, and HCD has identified additional requirements on its website, but the Site Inventory Guidebook provides additional detail and a kind of the technical analysis of how these sites are reviewed and how various laws are applied, and some specific terminology related to sites is applied. So the sites inventory is definitely a critical component of the housing element. HCD won't certify a housing element unless we've identified either adequate sites or a path to a jurisdiction having adequate sites. So there'll be a lot of sites listed for each jurisdiction that identify potential income groups that can be accommodated by those sites. And those sites aren't required to solely be developed housing for those income groups, but the inventory just has to identify what it feasibly could be developed with. So So with that, I'll take a pause and see if there are any questions about the arena, the housing sites, or the information presented so far. And for those of you on Zoom, feel free to raise a hand if you have a question. So the handout, the presentation isn't on the table. It will be up on the county's website after the meeting. So we will be putting it up on the website. And for those of you on Zoom, if you have any questions, also feel free to raise a hand. So here's these are distributed based on a number of factors. So the state looks at the current income levels of each jurisdiction. So they look at the existing types of housing in that jurisdiction, the existing income levels that are accommodated, and then they look at the projected number of units that are needed countywide. They try to allocate the numbers for to balance housing by income between the jurisdictions, and then they also allocate additional units to jurisdictions based on just their equity factors and other factors where like vacancy rate and other factors they take into account. They use census data as for the income and then Department of Finance data for the housing population projections and housing unit types.
Commissioner Bennett, the Zoom people aren't going to be able to hear you, so do you mind going up to the microphone? Because they'll want to hear your comments.
I was just wondering where the income data comes from, because if it comes from people filing state income tax, there are a lot of people on the bottom of society hanging out that don't file that. So my thought is perhaps the lower income figures are understated.
And yet, as I said, this is based on the census data, which is attempts to count a representative portion of each jurisdiction's population.
Okay. Thank you.
And then we do have a comment on Zoom. I saw a hand earlier, but we have one hand up. Jim, I'm going to go ahead and unmute you, and then you'll need to finish unmuting yourself. Go ahead, Jim.
Can you hear me now?
Definitely.
Okay. I'm just curious. This is the first cycle with the existence of SB 9, and I wonder how you blend that in with your previous methods.
That's a really good question. So for those in the room who aren't familiar with SB 9, SB 9 is a new law that allows or that requires jurisdictions to allow single lots that are zoned for single family uses to be developed with two units per lot. And then they also allow for a lot split. So that you could have a single family lot that is split into two separate lots and each of those developed with up to two units. So either two single family units or a duplex. And the state has not provided concrete guidance, but they have indicated that there are two paths to addressing the SB 9 units. One of those is to look at past trends. So similar to accessory dwelling units, we can look at the number of second units that have been developed in the county or requests for lot splits for multiple units, like, you know, that would be similar to SB 9, and we can project out for the county and each jurisdiction kind of the same average number of units per year. We can also do a parcel by parcel assessment that looks at the various single family lots in the county and the potential for those lots to have a second unit or to split and have three more units. And so the state hasn't identified where it will limit those assumptions, but we're pretty certain that as long as a site is vacant, if it qualifies for SB 9, we can count up to four units on those sites. And if they're not vacant, then we will have a harder time demonstrating to the state that the lot is likely to develop at any rate greater than what you've been seeing in the past for second units. In terms of income levels, the SB9 units don't meet the density requirements to accommodate very low and low income units. So we would only be able to demonstrate a similar rate that has happened in the past for accessory dwelling units and second units that have been affordable. So that the SB9 units will likely be primarily allocated to the moderate and above moderate income levels.
We have another.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We have another Zoom comment. Steve, I'm going to go ahead and unmute you, and I'm not sure, Angela, if you're wanting to comment, if you could raise your hand again. Go ahead,
Hi, this
Steve.
Is Steve Christian. Hi, yeah, this is Steve Christensen. I'm curious about the site inventory, about when that might be available for public to view, and if the reasons or for the deciding what is sites that are available in that inventory is available also to know what are the criteria for deciding what is available and what is not.
So we anticipate that will be available in May, and there will be a chapter in the housing element dedicated to the inventory of residential sites that will identify the assumptions that were used for each of the sites. Our initial criteria is the existing zoning. So based on existing zoning, we'll analyze the potential for vacant sites in the county and each of the cities to accommodate additional residential development. And so where jurisdictions have a shortfall, so where the existing zoning does not accommodate the RENA, then we will be identifying additional sites and additional methods for those jurisdictions to accommodate their RENA. And so we would be looking at sites that are have a high potential for rezoning, that are located in an area that meets the affirmatively furthering fair housing criteria, hopefully near services or in areas that are underserved with different housing types. So we would kind of look at balancing various housing types and also looking at the availability of public services and infrastructure.
Are there any more comments in Zoom land? And if you have trouble commenting, please use the chat box. No comments at this time.
Well, I'm going to jump back to our upcoming slide here. So we have some information about Amador County and each of the cities that I'll go through. So this screen looks at population growth trends from 1991 through 2021 for the unincorporated county in each of the cities. And for those in the audience, I realize this might be a little hard to read. Each of the dashed lines corresponds with one of the incorporated cities with the color coding on the bottom of the legend. And then the solid orange line up toward the top is the population of the unincorporated county. So in 2021, there are approximately 37,377 persons countywide, 153 in Amador City, 7,712 in Ione, 4,621 in Jackson, 950 in Plymouth, 2,421 in Sutter Creek, and then the largest population cohorts in the unincorporated county with 21,520 persons.
We have a request to see if you possibly can enlarge the screen.
So on my laptop, it's as large as possible. If you're looking at this with a tablet or your browser, you may need to kind of toggle your Zoom browser a bit to make it as large as possible, or if you're on a smartphone, zoom in via your smartphone. Yeah, there's not really, with the PowerPoint, a real good way to zoom in here. But I can let you know that the lowest line is Amador City. The green line right above it is Plymouth. The kind of dark grayish black line is Sutter Creek. And then the blue line is Amador City. And above that is the Ione. And then the numbers on the bottom of the page are the years. And the numbers on the left are the population amounts.
I have a question. Is the... prison population included in the Ione figures?
Yes, it is. That's part of the incorporated city, so it's
right.
Counted in group quarters. And I do have a Q&A again after these slides as well.
One moment. We have an additional Zoom comment from Steve. There is two little lines between the display and planning zone. Put cursor on two little lines and slide to the right. Between the display and the planning zone.
I'm not. Yeah. I can. That's about as big as it's going to get.
Steve, just so you know, too, this PowerPoint is going to be uploaded to the Amador County website under the planning department. And so I'll be doing that first thing tomorrow morning so that it will be accessible from your own computer or phone. So maybe then you will be able to look even more deeply at this page.
This, similar to the previous page, this shows the household growth trends in the county, and so similar legend as the previous page, and you can kind of see very, very slow household formation rates for the city, and then a kind of a higher rate for the county from 91 through 2006, and that flattening out for most of the jurisdictions over the last decade and a half or so. In 2021, there are about 18,381 total households in the county, 110 in Amador City, 1,816 in Ione, 2,363 in Jackson, 500 in Plymouth, 1,404 in Sutter Creek, and again, the largest number of total households is in the unincorporated county with 12,188 households distributed throughout the unincorporated area. Tenure is the ratio or the rate of owners to renters, and on these bars, the lower portion, the dark blue, is the number of owners or the percentage of owners in the county in each of its jurisdictions, and the upper lighter blue bar is the percentage of renters. And there's about just over 75% renters in Amador County as a whole, just over 75% owner-occupied households in Amador County as a whole. And as you can see, Ione has about the same as the county, and then Amador City has significantly less owner households at about 37.8 with 62.2% of households renting, and then Sutter Creek has just under half of their households as owner-occupied and just over half renting, and 62.7% are owner-occupied in Plymouth and 62.1% in Jackson. And then the unincorporated area, higher than the average, 84.9% own, and about 15.1% of households rent. The housing stock composition looks at the various types of housing units in the county. The dark blue lines are the single-family detached households, so your kind of standard single-family home. The turquoise portions are mobile homes, and then the grayish portion is multifamily with five or more units. The brighter blue is duplex, triplex, and fourplex units, and that light blue is attached single-family homes, which are typically townhomes or condominiums. So as you can see, in all of the areas of the county, the majority of units are single-family detached homes. Both Jackson, Plymouth, and Sutter Creek all have the largest range of housing types. And then the unincorporated area, Ione, Amador City, and Amador County all have vast majority of single-family detached homes. Two to four units, so duplex, triplex, and fourplex. So the number of units in the structure. And we'll have these many more tables in the housing element with more detail. So we're trying to kind of give a quick overview tonight, but you'll have a lot more detail in the housing element itself. There are a lot of other factors we look at when we're looking at the household and housing characteristics. We look at average household size, which relates to the number of bedrooms in a housing unit and overcrowding rates. the average household size in the county as a whole is 2.38 persons per household, and you know, similar ranges throughout the county with Jackson, Sutter Creek, and Ione all having, and Amador City being a little lower than the average household size, and then Plymouth having a much higher average household size of almost 3 persons per household. Large households are households with 5 or more persons, and about 7%, 6.9% in the county as a whole. Fewer large households in Ione and Sutter Creek, and then the largest amount of large households is in Plymouth with 15.7%. And vacancy rate can indicate that there are a lot of homes available for rent or for sale in an area. In Amador County, there are a lot of seasonal vacancies, so there are a lot of second homes, vacation rentals, and other homes that are considered vacant, but they're not necessarily available for rent or for purchase, so they don't increase the housing stock that's available. So while the vacancy rates look high, it's not really indicative of a lot of homes that are available. So the average vacancy rate in the county is 16%. The lowest vacancy rate in individual jurisdictions is 7.2% in Jackson, and the highest is 30.9% in Amador City. The median income based on the census data is about $62,772 per household in the county, a slightly higher median income in Ione of $73,036, and the lowest median income is in Sutter Creek, $45,147. Households under the federal poverty level, and that's the federal poverty level is applied across the nation. 6.2% of households in Amador County as a whole are under the poverty line. The smallest percentage is in Amador City with no households identified under the poverty line, about 4.2% in Ione, and then higher numbers in Jackson at 9.5% and in Sutter Creek at 7.9%. And the jobs to household ratio is the number of jobs per household, and in the county as a whole, it's just under one job per household in the county. Slightly lower numbers in Amador City, in Jackson, Sutter Creek, in the unincorporated area, and just over one job per household in Ione, 1.15, and Plymouth has the highest jobs to household ratio at 1.52 jobs per household.
We have a question from Steve Christensen. Do you measure availability of housing?
And the housing element will have more details on the vacancy rate, which looks at the availability of housing and homes that are for rent or for sale versus just vacant in general. Amador County is the county as a whole, inclusive of all of the cities as well as the unincorporated area. It's the total or the average, where it's an average or the total, depending on the data point. That is when you subtract out all of the incorporated areas. And so the reason we distinguish is because HCD is going to look at the unincorporated data in the county's housing element component and then each of the city's data for each of the cities. And typically when you're preparing a housing element for a jurisdiction, you compare the total of the county to the individual city or to the unincorporated area. So we're putting it all together for this this joint housing element update effort. No. It's the count of only the unincorporated areas.
Zoomers can't hear.
Oh, and so we have I'm sorry for those in Zoom, but some of the questions are related to the difference between the Amador County data versus the unincorporated data. Another factor we look at is the affordability of housing in the county. And so we look at home prices and home values, and in the county and its jurisdictions, you can see that the curves are very similar for the county and jurisdictions at the rate of change in home prices. But there's been a strong upward trend in housing prices since about 2012, and that has risen steeply in the last 2 years. In 2022, to date, the median home price in Amador County was approximately $419,000. And in order to afford this housing price, a household needs to make approximately $81,000 per year, which is $39 per hour of the workforce and the family combined, to afford that sales price, and that assumes standard mortgage rates and 20% down. And this is a pretty significant increase since 2010, when a household needed to make about $47,000 per year to afford the median home price of $231,000 in 2010. The rental rates in Amador County range from about $920 to $1,965, depending on the number of bedrooms in the unit. And these average rents are affordable to households earning approximately $57,000 to $79,000 per year. And in 2019, renters in the county made up just less than 25%, so 23.5% of all of the occupied housing units. And it's important to note, when we're talking about affordability, that when we're looking at census data, approximately 55% of renters in Amador County spent more than 30% of their monthly household income on housing costs. And a standard for overpayment for housing is when you pay more than 30% of your income toward housing. So about 55% of the renters in the county are overpaying for housing. So this is based on the American Census data, ACS, American Community Survey data, and that's the latest data that's available that has this level of detail. And so if they release updated data before we wrap up, before we finish the draft of the housing element, we would update that. But right now, 2019 is the latest 5-year data that we have. Yes, their sample data sometimes is older than that. So. So to date, there's been some progress for the fifth cycle regional housing need allocation. As you'll see from the total numbers, so there's the RENA and the permitted column, there have been significantly less units allocated during the fifth cycle than are allocated to each jurisdiction during the sixth cycle. So all of the cities and the unincorporated county exceeded their total allocation, except for Amador City, which didn't have any units permitted. Most of the jurisdictions didn't have very low and low income units that were documented. So while they didn't accommodate the very low and low income levels, they did exceed the moderate and above moderate income levels. So there's been a lot of housing development in the county, and not as much very low and low. So we know during this cycle the county is going to look at these past numbers and look at ways to further encourage accommodating and meeting the very low and low income RENA during this cycle. If you want more information on the past fifth cycle performance or housing elements of each jurisdiction, the Housing and Community Development Department has a housing element dashboard on its website, and you can go through a bunch of data and a bunch of factors for the county and each of its cities on this. And so this is just an example that shows what happens when you click on IOWN and you look at the affordability by year. So it identifies the number of units reported by year, the affordable levels, and then the total levels. So you can click around and get a lot of data on what's happened during the fifth cycle in the county and its jurisdictions. The fifth cycle is the current housing element cycle, which ended in 2021. So it was a 5-year cycle from, 2021. It was actually more like I'll have to look at the exact numbers. I think it was 2015 through 2014, thank you. So 2014 through 2019, and then they're kind of jumped ahead a little bit here.
Everyone on Zoom can't
I have
hear
to
your question. If you want to come up to the microphone, then everybody can hear you.
Thank you. It's been my experience in city council meetings and planning agencies within them that they often have this 9-year sunset or renewal of their plans and the housing element. But typically, the state gives them a get-out-of-jail-free and extends that sunsetting or deadline for another 5 years sometimes.
they haven't done so in the past several cycles. So there's been some wiggle room in the exact date, but they haven't extended any of the fourth, fifth, or sixth cycle significantly.
Well, unfortunately, we get different reactions and information from some of the cities that don't necessarily jive with that statement. That we're being told in the audience that we're up against a deadline, we can't meet it right yet. Well, we're going to get an extension.
I see what you're saying. So there aren't official extensions. The county and the jurisdictions are behind the deadline, so the deadline has passed. It was in 2021. But the state understands that the county and the jurisdictions are underway. The county actually received a planning grant. It took quite a while for the state to get the grant signed and implemented to fund this. So the state could, you know, since you're out of compliance, the state could take action, but it's not going to, because I think they understand that it's
okay,
underway.
So it is typical that they extend it right along. As
not officially, you won't get that, but yes, they're looking the other way at the moment.
Okay. I had two other questions that lingered from the past. Did I hear you say that the prison population is in the city limits of Ione?
Yes. So when you look at the Department of Finance data for each of the cities in the county, there are two different population numbers. One is the group quarters number, and one is the population in households. And so that total population in Ione includes both the group quarters, which includes a large incarcerated population, as well as the household population.
But surely those people do not qualify for any of the criteria on housing.
And they're
they have no incomes, they have no structures, they don't rent, they're prisoners. How did they get folded in to the demographics?
So they're part of the total household population, or no, I'm sorry, they're part of the total population, but when HCD is projecting demand, I don't believe they include any demand for that population. So the housing units isn't necessarily based on the group quarters population. They look more at the household formation rates.
So then why is it included?
It's just part of the population numbers, and we could definitely add a little asterisk to call out what that is or to differentiate that.
Is the state requiring you to include them?
They typically want us to identify the entire population, as well as we identify the number of households, which is much lower.
And yet they don't separate them out, showing them as to what type of – because I think it would be a surprise to most of the populace that prison inmates are considered a part of the population of the demographics of homeowners, renters, duplexes, et cetera. It's a separate, unrelated population, so I'm surprised that they force you to include them.
We can definitely have multiple numbers and show the non-group quarter population as well. And sometimes, what happens with the group quarter numbers, though, is it's not just prisoners. It also includes people who live in nursing homes, who live in residential care homes, and other non-housing types that the state doesn't count as a housing unit. So there are some population captured in that population, and there's no breakdown for that population. So
mobile home parks and senior facilities are folded into
mobile home parks are not, but okay. Like an assisted living facility would be, or a skilled nursing facility.
They're folded in with prisoners.
They're all part of the group quarter population. Okay. Any other questions from folks on Zoom? Seeing no raised hands in our audience or on Zoom, we'll move forward. And now we have a few activities. So we've got an interesting way to collect some information tonight. So we've got people on Zoom, people that are here live. So we're going to do some live polling. So those of you that have a smartphone or a phone that does text messaging, we ask you to pull it out. Or if you're on your computer, you can open another tab in your browser. You can also, if you're on Zoom, you can participate in the chat if you don't have a way to access the poll everywhere. But for those of you in the room, if you have a phone, you can actually, we have the QR code in the back of the room on some of the papers. You can scan that if you don't feel like entering this in. But you can go to pollev.com/BethThompson, BethThompson, 271. Or you can text Beth Thompson, B-E-T-H-T-H-O-M-P-S-O-N 271, to the phone number 22333 on your mobile device and participate via your mobile phone. So there are a couple ways. I'll give everyone a few minutes to get themselves oriented so that as we go through the next slides, you can provide your input and see your answers and thoughts pop up on the screen. So this gives everyone an opportunity to see this in action. So,
and I've gone ahead and put that in the chat box, the texting capability, the 22333 Beth Thompson 271.
And we also, for those of you here, we have a printed survey in the back if you want to fill that out. So you can fill it out and just hand it in if you, yes, you can fill that out too. So I'm going to hop to the next slide. So the first question is whether or not you live in Amador County. If you're responding via text, you would respond A for the first answer, B for the second, and C for the third. But yes, I live in one of the incorporated cities. Or you live in unincorporated Amador County, or no, you don't live in the county. So far, it looks like the majority of folks are residents of one of the incorporated cities. And Zoom, yeah. So anyone that wishes to can participate via their phone or the web. And then we actually have a formal survey that's available online as well that's much more detailed, but this is just to get a sense of who's with us tonight and what the thoughts are of the group that's here.
Is it the 22333? We're trying to help someone in the room be able to text. You can answer in the chat box as well if you'd prefer. A comment in Zoom land. I live in the unincorporated.
Adding our Zoom response, we're probably 50-50 of the people participating in the poll. 60% live in an incorporated city, so in Amador City, Ione, Jackson, Plymouth, or Sutter Creek, and 40% live in the unincorporated portion of the county. And no non-county residents reporting in. So our next question, do you work in Amador County? This one's an easy one, yes or no.
We have a Zoom comment, no, to add to the poll.
So most of our respondents work in the county. So another question, and this one will generate a word cloud. So in one word or phrase, what opportunities does the county have for this housing element? And if you're going to enter a phrase, use a dash in between the words, and it'll show up as a whole phrase. Otherwise, the words will get separated. So an example would be senior-housing to link that phrase together. Multi-residential. Looking at affordability opportunities. Probably means housing that's affordable to the households that currently aren't able to afford housing in the county. That would be my guess. Typically, affordable refers to the lower income groups or workforce housing. High density, low income housing. rentals. Go on to the next question. In one word or phrase, what are the main challenges the county faces related to accommodating and maintaining housing opportunities? So, in one word or phrase, what are the main challenges the county faces related to accommodating and maintaining housing opportunities? And once again, use a dash to connect the words that are in a phrase.
We have a Zoomer that would like to add cost.
Opposition and cost. People who don't want new housing, sometimes affordable, sometimes just more housing, so just opposition to housing would be resistance, a fire risk. Economic inequity. Infrastructure, water, water treatment, transportation, a broad range of responses here on the various challenges the county has to accommodating additional housing and maintaining its housing stock as well. Few more questions. What housing types should be prioritized in the county? Single family homes, duplex, triplex, and fourplex units, townhomes or condominiums, which are attached ownership units, apartments, typically rental units, mixed use housing, so housing in conjunction with commercial, office, or other non-residential uses, accessory dwelling units, housing for seniors, supportive or transitional housing, or emergency shelters, and workforce housing.
And I'm not sure if I missed it, but we had a comment to add available land at the last question, and apartments.
And you can indicate more than one housing type. You have more than one that you'd like to see. Set it up to allow more than one. But so we've got responses here for single-family homes, duplex, triplex, and fourplex units, apartments, rental apartments, housing for seniors, and supportive or transitional housing or emergency shelters. So another question for you, what populations have the greatest housing needs? Seniors, persons with a disability, including developmental disabilities, homeless persons or households or persons that are at risk of homelessness, large families with five or more people, single parent and grandparent households, farm workers, first responders, teachers, and local employees. And by local, we mean people who, you know, are working within the county as a whole.
We have a Zoom comment to add local employees and unhoused.
a more informal feedback at tonight's meeting. We have a much more detailed survey that's available online that we're hoping to get a lot of residents and people who work in the county or have an interest in living in the county completing. So that one's much more detailed. And I'll mention the link at the end of the workshop, and that's the one that's advertised on the flyer that went out for tonight's meeting. So that one's, this one's a little more informal and just to get an idea of what the thoughts are of the people participating tonight. But the other one's much, much more detailed. So far we have 50 responses. We're definitely hoping to get some more. 50. Well, in fewer households though, but yes. Complete the survey, ask your friends and neighbors, coworkers, and other people interested in housing issues in the county to complete the survey.
Is that survey available hard copy?
It is not available hard copy, but I'm sure that we could provide it. Yeah, we could figure out if you need a hard copy of the survey and that you have difficulty accessing it online, just call the county and we will get a hard copy to you. All right, so we're seeing homeless persons, persons at risk of homelessness, single parent and grandparent households, and then local employees. So some specific populations with the greatest housing needs. And we did do the same survey earlier at our previous workshop, and we preserved that data and the responses. And so from tonight, we'll also pull out a report that has the responses we got tonight as well as the feedback we got on Zoom. So the housing element will include all of the answers we got. So you'll see your responses and comments in the appendix of the housing element and summarized also in the public comment section. Where in Amador County is housing needed? So this could be specific cities, specific unincorporated communities, areas of a community or city. So far we're seeing everywhere and in the cities. Or your co-attendees at the meeting. Yeah. Martel?
The question was, is there housing in Martel?
Jackson? Right. I'm just reading out some of the responses we're getting.
We have a Zoom comment, Wicklow Way.
Martel, Jackson, in the cities and everywhere. Give a few more moments. Oh yeah, a few near transportation, so areas with access to transportation. Closer to Sacramento.
We have a comment from Jamie Labenko, Plymouth.
So the last question of tonight's poll is, what fair housing issues and or obstacles to housing are you aware of in Amador County and its cities? So once again, a fill in the blank or type in your response and link any multi-word phrases with a dash so that they pop up as a phrase. And so these are obstacles to being able to obtain housing or obstacles to being able to build housing. So this could be obstacles a renter or homebuyer faces as well as housing development.
NIMBY. Steve Christensen wants to add NIMBY.
Lack of housing, lack of it, affordability,
and
cost.
Jamie wants to add cost. And I'm not sure if Jamie was able to get that. Did she come on? Is this the last one? Okay.
Yeah, lack of availability, lack of housing, affordability, cost, and NIMBY are what we're seeing. fire insurance? Right, so for those of you who are wondering about the next steps in the process, I'll recap some of what we started off with in terms of the timeline for the housing element. So we're wrapping up the evaluation and review of current conditions and development of plans and programs, and that's happening through about April of this year. We are planning to have the public review draft housing element available in May for that 30-day public review period. Following the public review, we'll revise it to respond to public comments, and we'll include a summary of the public comments we received, as well as the actual comments will be available on the county's website. And we'll prepare the HCD review draft housing element and anticipate submitting that to the state in about June. They have a 90-day or 3-month review period. Once we get comments back from the state, we'll make revisions and have the adoption draft available. We're hoping to have that out in October. If we get really lengthy comments from the state, it may take a little bit longer. And then that'll go to each planning commission and to the city councils and to the board for consideration. So we're hoping to have the adoption hearings wrapped up in December of this year and then submit it to the state for certification. And throughout the public review period, the HCD review period, and the planning commission, board, and council consideration, the public is invited to attend meetings, to comment on the documents. You can comment, you know, via email, you can write letters, or you can attend meetings and comment verbally. So we definitely welcome input on the contents of the housing element, as well as any housing needs or priorities that should be considered either by individual cities or by the county in addressing housing concerns. The counties is the main host for housing element update information, and the county has a dedicated webpage at www.amadorgov.org/departments/planning/2022-housing-element. So as additional meetings and activities are available, they'll be posted to that webpage. And if we encourage each of you to take the Housing Needs and Priorities Survey, as I've mentioned several times, it's a lengthier and more detailed survey that allows us to really identify some of the deeper issues related to housing, and also has some open-ended questions where you can fill in the blanks and provide your thoughts and concerns related to housing. That's available at www.surveymonkey.com/r/AmadorCO_6THE. And so please go and complete that survey. We've had about 50 surveys completed to date, and we're going to have it running for a while longer, a few more weeks. So we're hoping to get some more responses to that. And if you have any questions or you want to identify some additional ways to participate or make comments, please contact the project lead, Chuck Beatty, Amador County's planning director. His email is cbaatty@amadorgov.org. And you can also reach him via phone at the county's planning department, 209-223-6380. So if you have any input, we definitely welcome questions and comments, and hope that you'll participate throughout the process. With that, I've wrapped up my presentation, but if you have any additional comments or questions, we'd be happy to hear them. So we do have a comment in the audience here, and for the folks on Zoom, feel free to raise a hand, and we'd be happy to answer your questions as well. And could you, yeah, so we inadvertently.
I got here probably about 5 minutes late, so I didn't get to identify everyone that's here, or I wasn't aware of who everyone was here. I know Greg, he's legal. I assume he's legal.
I'm Chuck Beatty. I'm the county's planning director, not county council.
We spoke, but we haven't met yet. And it's not necessary to recite who you are. I assume you're members of the county planning.
Beth Thompson with DeNovo Planning Group. We're the firm hired by the county to prepare their housing element update.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay. And might as well fill in the third place.
My name is Jeffrey Sutherland. I'm also with the Novo Planning Group, and I've been in contract with the city of Ione as our city planner. So,
okay. My question here to you is, we've had 5 months since September to garner information from the cities, yet tonight we have nothing for the public to look at for the respective cities. Have the cities not done their due diligence and tendered information to you? Do they plan to do it, and will it be the last minute so that there's no public review prior to your May draft?
The May draft is the public review period, so we're assimilating all of the information and preparing that public review draft. So the information we're getting from the jurisdictions, as well as additional data that we're putting together, all goes out in the public review draft.
So were the cities aware that they needed to have information submitted to the planning department? And in 5 months, nobody's given you anything?
This isn't about what the cities have or haven't done. We have a countywide group with the county and a representative from each city that meets monthly on the Housing Element Update project. So we're getting input from the cities, and they'll be participating throughout the process.
Is that hard copy input or just vocal?
Some via email, some sending of data. So kind of a variety of things we're receiving.
Is that open to the public?
A lot of it, I mean, we can post it. It's not, most of it's pretty dry. There are copies of their annual performance reports and various planning documents that are available online. So just pulling together some data and identifying projects that are in process.
And will there be a breakdown per city in the draft in May? In other words, we can look at the formatted information, what their compliance is currently, what it's going to be, what areas they're working on. I mean, is it going to be fleshed out so that the public can really get some good information?
Yes. So the housing element, it'll be a document that has some portions of the housing element will have joint data, so data for the county and each of the cities all in one location where it can be compared. And then there will be policies and programs that apply to the county and each of the cities, and then the county as well as the individual cities will each have individual customized policies and programs that address specific concerns or measures that they will be taking. And then for each jurisdiction, there's also a review of their performance under the current housing element. So there's a separate review for each jurisdiction. So there's a lot of jurisdiction level data, and it'll be easily identifiable which chapters are comprehensive and address all of the jurisdictions and which components are limited to a single jurisdiction.
Can you break down approximately what each jurisdiction, meaning each city, has to budget for its performance of a housing element? And then what is the grant dollars that have been afforded to the county, and what is the savings?
We don't have that breakdown. So it's a total number. So there's a total number of just the grant amount.
Which is?
And I don't know what the county's total amount is because they have some other activities they're doing.
The funds come from the regional early action planning grant that the county received to do multiple projects. Part of it goes to the housing element, and I believe around $160,000 was budgeted from that grant for the housing element.
And what was the cost of the consultants?
That was the amount.
So, are you saying $100,000 was the contractual price of the budget, which is $100,000? Am I understanding you correctly?
I don't understand your question.
How much are the consultants charging for their performance out of the budget, or just separately? We know it's a $100,000 budget. What are they?
The contract with the consultants was $159,000 and change out of a $160,000 budget from the grant.
Oh, I thought I heard you say it was budgeted for the grant was $100,000.
$160,000.
My apologies. So magically, it arose to expend everything that's in that grant funding.
The entire grant was $444,000.
Oh, all right.
County allocated 160 for, or requested 160
For housing.
For the house, for a joint housing element on behalf of the cities and the county.
Right. There are other components utilizing that grant.
Correct.
But of the $160,000 set aside for them, the consultants are charging $159,000?
Yes. Yes.
Just wanted to make sure I heard that.
And we have a Zoom comment when we're ready.
We're ready.
This is from Steve. I believe this was Steve Christensen. Yes, Steve Christensen. Does the site inventory include just county property and city property, or does it also include private property?
The inventory includes all private and public sites that are designated for residential use or designated for non-residential uses that allow a residential component. So the site inventory is all lands, public and private, that have the potential to accommodate housing. And typically we're looking at the more, we're not looking at the agricultural lots or really large lots in the unincorporated areas. We're focusing more on those that are anticipated to develop with housing at, you know, one or two units per acre or less, or higher densities than that. So we're focusing on the highest development potential. But those are sites that are already zoned or designated that will be in the inventory. Any other comments or questions? Any folks on Zoom that want to raise a hand or type a question into the chat? We don't have anyone raising their hand on Zoom, so go on up to the microphone.
There are no funding coming from the county. This is all grant money that's provided by taxpayers. Okay, but nothing from the county budget.
No, there was no county match or city match involved.
Okay, thank you.
And I do see Steve Christensen has his hand up. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi, thank you. My question had to do with eminent domain. And what part does eminent domain play in the housing element update?
So the county and the cities aren't required to build the housing, so they're not required to have control of the sites and to actually ensure construction of the housing. They're required to accommodate the housing through identifying sites that have appropriate zoning and the potential to be developed during the planning period. If the sites are underutilized, if there are existing structures or uses on the site, then the bar is a bit higher in terms of demonstrating that those sites are realistic and feasible. But for the vacant sites, it's a little more straightforward. So there's not eminent domain involved. And some cities do consider that to get to control sites and to develop housing, but typically the housing element does not require that.
Any other Zoom comments?
Well, thank you all for coming out tonight. It's been a pleasure getting your comments and feedback, and we hope you'll take a look at the housing element. As I mentioned, we will have a summary of the comments we received, and we will also have the full details of the lengthy survey that I've mentioned several times. And so we'll have that broken out where we get the responses all of the responses received. And then we'll also identify the responses for individual cities and the unincorporated area of the county, so you can compare the different needs between the different areas and jurisdictions.
And Steve does have another comment.
Oh.
I'm going to go ahead and unmute you, Steve.
No, I didn't. I lowered my hand.
Okay, great.
All right. Well, thank you all.